You're listening to the Paranormal Peeps on the Darkcast Network. Come to the dark side of indie podcasts with the Darkcast Network.
We have cookies. Between the realm of the dead and the journeys of the living, join Josh, Jamie, and Elisa as they delve into the vast world of the paranormal and breathe life back into the history of the departed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Paranormal Peeps podcast. I am your host, Josh, and unfortunately, Jamie and Elisa are not able to be with us here today, but we do have a special guest. We have Brenda from Horrifying History joining us today.
Hello.
How's the weather out in Eastern Canada? Well, that sounds about normal.
My mom, she lives in Western Canada, and every time I talk to her, like I phone her every Sunday, she always complains about how much snow they got. And I said, Mom, I looked it up. I actually looked it up. You've had total accumulation 2.5 feet. That's it. I'm now working on 12.
Feet or inches?
Feet.
Ooh,
feet.
That's 144 inches for all of you who are trying to do the math in your head.
It's actually dangerous to drive down the street now because you can't actually look around a corner. The snowbanks are too big. But today it decided to go in and spoil us with a nice little snow sleet mixture that just sticks everywhere and you just have to clean it up and it's heavier than hell.
Oh, yeah. That's no fun. That is not fun at all.
I'm done with winter. I was done at 10 feet. Now we're 12. When spring? I need to know.
Well,
it's got to be faster.
I think Punxsutawney Phil said 2 more weeks of winter. So
do you know what actually happened?
July?
Seriously, to our groundhog, our Wyarton Willie, who is like a little bit north of me, he didn't see his shadow. So we're supposed to be all good. But there is a Quebec, which I'm really close to Quebec, groundhog. He died. What does that mean? Because technically I'm closer to him.
That means you have eternal winter.
That's what I started to think. It's his fault that I got 12 feet.
Yep.
And I'm supposed to get another foot this week.
Oh, boy. That's atrociously awful.
That stupid dead groundhog. It's all his fault.
I would blame the groundhog and the ghost of the groundhog if he comes back and haunts you.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to bust his butt out. I'm not happy with him.
I don't blame you. So your podcast name is Horrifying History. And I think you cover all things fun and spooky and dark.
Well, what we do is I actually like to describe Horrifying History as the place where fact, lore, and history collides with the supernatural. So in each show, we discuss a spooky-based topic, and we tell our listeners about the history and lore, but we also present the science and the documentation and facts behind the subject. So we don't tell what our listeners what they are going to think. We like them, let them figure out by themselves where the truth actually lies. And we like to tell a good story along the way.
Oh, that's always fun. Mm-hmm. I think history is best learned when it's told in story form instead of just here's a bunch of dates and people that you probably should remember.
Well, that's a problem I had in school. I always enjoyed history, but I remember in high school, I had like the worst history teacher on the planet. Like, I swear to God, there's so many bad stories I can say about this guy. But the thing is, we were lucky if we got dates. Like this guy, I think he was just waiting for retirement. And it really kind of sucked the life out of history. And I think if they would teach history differently in schools or in general, that you would have more people interested in it. Like you don't need to go and read a fiction novel. You can look at history and there's a lot of things there that you would not believe that even happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you just get into the plots and in the subplots of even like minor decisions that states and things have happened, it's better than any novel in that avenue.
Well, it's actually funny. I'll give you a little topic here. Since I seen in the background, you have a cat. I love cats.
I
love cats. But I'm doing an episode that's going to come out in April about the worst documents that ever got declassified, and the CIA, that's all I need to say, really, is the CIA. But
yes.
The CIA decided that cats would make the perfect spy. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because cats can go everywhere and everybody's like, oh, there's just a cat. So what they decided to make is a Frankenkitty. That's what I called them. So they invented something to put a transmitter at the base of their skull inside the cat. Then they would run wires all the way up the tail and then run another wire as a listening device in its ear so they could tell this cat commands and thinking that this cat would actually obey. Now, if they actually went and talked to one cat owner, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have spent, which would be in today's funds, $202 million on one cat. So they wired up this cat. They let it go outside. They think it's all good. It walked outside. It got hit by a taxi cab and it got killed. $202 million gone like that. Where would you make that up in a book? No, it actually happened.
No, but that does remind me a little bit of the Hunger Games when they were talking about the Capitol making like mockingjays and murder hornets and stuff like that. Like,
yep,
that type
they tried
of mutant it. Thing that people create. And so I can see people trying to do that, but cat is the worst option.
Like, they should have known better. Cats don't listen. They listen when they want to. We are their master. We think we're their masters? No. We serve them.
Exactly.
Dogs are different. Dogs just want to make their people happy. Cats couldn't care less.
No.
So why would you spend $202 million on a damn cat? Well, try to teach it a command? Come on.
Plus, they sleep 20 hours a day. So
what are they going to do? Like, wake them up and make them work extra hours by these commands in the ear? Yeah, it's not going to work. No. Like, if they talked to one cat owner, just one, they would have saved $202 million.
Yeah. Dogs would have been a better choice.
Like, but I don't agree with that either, because I don't believe in Franken-kidding or Franken-dogging anything.
No, you should not be genetically modifying your pets in that avenue. Like, we've done selective breeding options to make, you know, different breeds of cats. But when the government gets involved, we end up with killer bees and other crazy
atomic kitties.
Yeah, just nothing good comes about when the government messes with pets in that avenue.
No. And that is like the least bad thing I'm talking about in that episode.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's amazing when you start to dig into history, some of the really, truly bad stuff you find.
Yeah. Well, and it's the stuff that it doesn't meet the media generally. So
no,
we just don't hear about it until you start digging through stuff and you're like, why did we spend money on that? Or who thought that was a good idea? But those are the fun things. It's fun to find those pieces of information out. And then it's even more fun when you find out that it's related to like a haunted location or it's related to a cryptid or aliens or something along those lines. And I think more people are finding that out as the government is being more and more honest with aliens at this time.
Or weather balloons or spy balloons or whatever it may shall be.
Yeah, when we get those across the country a couple times, that's always fun.
We got a couple of those.
Sure did. That was great. I was waiting for them to say that, it was nothing, and then find out that they shot down a flying saucer.
That would have been fantastic. You know, the whole weather balloon, we did that back in Roswell. Let's up our game a little bit for, you know, it's 2023. We went through sickness. We went through murder hornets. Let's bring this up a notch and bring some aliens out.
Exactly. But I do believe that the whole Roswell thing was a lie to begin with.
Trying to
dupe the people. Was it alien? That's tough to say. Roswell Roswell lives off of that fact.
I would.
Yeah, I would.
I would too. Why not? And they have so many people going there for that. The same thing could be said about the Mothman or the Bunny Man or all that. If I had something like that or a cryptid in my area, would I embrace that? Yeah.
Oh yeah, you definitely. Try to, right? We have a place here, and it's called it's nicknamed Area 52.
Oh, that's different.
Well, we have a large military depot out in the desert. And wouldn't you know it, lots of alien or UFO or UFAs or whatever they're calling them these days, a lot of sightings right around that base.
Well, same thing could be said to Cheyenne Mountain, right?
Yes, exactly.
But the funny thing is, my husband got the tour of Cheyenne Mountain, and he said, if you were inside, you'd be a little disappointed. It kind of does look like Terminator, you know, when they go into Cheyenne Mountain. That's pretty much it.
You're like, oh, that was depressing.
He was like, I expected a little more, but no.
But
he says it's just a normal base.
Nothing that great. But did he get to see all of it? Because
yes,
military is good about keeping those other pieces secret.
Oh, well, It's funny. My husband got deployed to a base that was the worst kept secret in the military when he went to Dubai. And it was nicknamed the Sandbox. And it was a secret base, but yet somehow it got on Google Maps.
Good job. Good job.
Yeah, I'm like, there he is.
Yeah, you know, we're that good. Just let the satellites do their own thing. So talking ghosts and talking in that part of the paranormal, what was your first ever ghostly encounter that you can remember?
Oh, well, that was when I was three. So when I was a child, I grew up in a farm in Alberta in Canada. So it's the prairies. And I do believe that, you know, farm people like having children for labor.
Why wouldn't you?
Because all of us children who ever grew up on a farm, you learn how to be like driving a truck by the time you're nine. That's actually the first time I drove a grain truck was nine. But the point of it is, I was 3 years old. My dad was breaking a lot of new land. So he brought cats in to clear all these huge old pine trees down. But with that, there's still rocks and roots. So that's what the children are for. So my dad bought us all little work gloves. Yes, they do have work gloves, leather work gloves for three-year-olds. And I couldn't have an axe to chop them out because I was too young. So he gave me a hatchet. And me and my hatchet going in the field, chopping up these things and getting rid of them. And so on the way home, my dad would allow us to go ride in the bucket. So for a farm kid, that is like what you always want to do because it's just fun.
Oh,
so
yeah.
My dad had... We climbed into the bucket. My dad brought it up and he had a couple big rocks in there. As we're going back to the house, he told my brother and sister, who were one's 2 and one's 4 years older than me, so little kids, watch your sister. And they're like, okay, which means they won't. And so as we're driving full speed in the tractor back to the house, I thought, what a great idea. I could stand on this rock in this bucket in the moving vehicle and I could see more stuff, right? Because I was little, I was short.
Sure.
So climb on this rock. My dad hits a bump. I flew over the bucket underneath the engine and I land on the ground. And the next thing is the first tire runs over me. Yeesh. Then comes the duels. And I kind of move my head out of the way best I can. And I'm kind of pinched about half of me underneath those duels. My parents lost their minds for obvious reasons. Tractor stops. My dad's running down. My mom and dad do like this baseball slide. And then my dad has to back the tractor off. So the reason I didn't die was the fact that it was fresh plowed land and I fell into a dip. So that is why I literally walked away without a mark. But the weird thing was when my dad hit and grabbed, they're like touching your abdomen. Does this hurt? Does this hurt? Does this hurt?
Yep.
Looking for the broken bones. And I couldn't figure out why dad was beside me, but then dad was behind the tractor and he was in a different outfit. So he was wearing these kind of like woolen style, you know, like the 1920, 30 sort of woolen style dress pants sort of thing that like work pants that they had, pleat in the front, suspenders, white shirt, long sleeve with the sleeves rolled up to about the elbow, which my dad always rolled his up to the elbow because he wore long sleeves. And but the thing is, he looked older. Like my dad didn't have white hair. My dad had same shade as me, dark hair. But this guy had white hair. And I'm like, Dad, why are you behind the tractor? And he's like, she's got a concussion. Oh my God, we got to bring her to the hospital. And so I was fine. There was literally nothing wrong with me. I was just dusty. My mom and dad were so upset. They blamed my siblings. They got grounded, never could ride in the bucket again, which I was heartbroken because that was so cool. But I still never had the question answered of why my dad was behind the bucket. I just dropped it. Fast forward a couple of years. So behind my grandparents' house, there was another old house we used to play in. And that was like the original cabin that my grandpa built.
Okay.
So I was told. So I'd always go out there and they had like a porch swing. So I'd swing on it. And one day I looked down and I seen what I thought was a coin. And it was between the boards of the porch. So I pulled it out. I'm like, cool, this is my lucky coin. So I literally would carry this everywhere I went. If I had a test, if I were to travel somewhere, if I was just nervous, I would pop it in my pocket. And that was my good luck charm until I hit about 18. So when I hit before I hit that point, I'd say I was about 14 years old. Back in that little house, I found a whole bunch of old negatives, picture negatives in a store. So I'm like, oh, these are cool. So I brought them to my mom and she goes, let's get them developed. And it was of a guy who looked exactly like my dad, except older. And dad's like, or my dad goes, that's my dad. Now, my dad, my grandfather, when I now found out, he died in 1947 and he died when my dad was 9. and sudden heart attack on that deck when he was on that porch swing.
Oh, my.
So that was the first time I seen him. And he was wearing the same outfit as when I was 3 years old and seen him behind the tractor. So that's when I knew that that coin must be from my grandpa and it's got to be a good luck charm. And because it was where he passed away. And that obviously my grandpa was there because I was in crisis that day. Never thought anything more of it until I hit 18 years old. This is when I decided to bring that coin to an antique dealer to get it appraised. And they said, it's not a coin. I'm like, pardon? And they said, no, you can see right here on the top that it used to be a pendant and that's where it snapped. So I went to the jeweler, got it cleaned, and I went and got the little loop put back on so I could put it on a chain. And I was picking out chains. And I said, you know, he's pushing me towards more feminine looking chains. But I want a rope chain. And I says, I don't know why I want silver, but I want silver. And it has to be to sit here. That's where I want it to sit. And they said, yeah, that's more masculine. And I says, it doesn't matter. I think it looks right with the piece.
Yeah.
I wear it to Christmas that year. And my grandma seen it. And my grandma, she literally just turned white. All the color was out of her face. And I thought I did something wrong. I'm like, what's wrong, grandma? What's going on? That she looked for that. That pendant was my grandpa's. He wore it everywhere, every day, all day. That was his good luck piece, as what my grandma told me. And the day he died, she found the chain. It got ripped off when he fell onto the porch. And she couldn't find the actual pendant. So she even took like a knife and went through those boards. It didn't come out. So she thought it was gone. And she says, I haven't seen this now for 40 years. And she says, obviously, it wasn't meant to be that I was to have it. It was meant to be yours. I tried to give it back. She wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
So when grandma passed away, I actually inherited her original wedding ring from her first marriage of my grandpa in 1947. And it wasn't until about a year ago, because I put it on that chain. I never thought anything about it till a year ago. And I'm like, this is the first time those two pieces have been together since 1947.
Oh, wow.
So I wear them both everywhere I travel. If I feel I need luck, I still wear it every time I do need luck.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. It's so neat to find those little pieces like that from our grandparents and or from older relatives in those, because it's just not something you expect to figure out, but it's super neat.
I just, as a kid, you see it when you're 7 or 8 years old and you just think it's something cool. And like, I literally threw it in my pencil case at school as my good luck charm. I carried that for years. How did I not lose it?
Especially right? as a little kid.
So it obviously was meant to be, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because if you found it young, I mean, it's easy to lose anything when you're older. But it seems like, you know, if you're under 10 years old, you lose it 10 seconds after you got it.
Pretty much. I still do that.
So, except for this, because you've managed to keep it. Mm-hmm. So
it was meant to be.
Yeah, it was meant to be. And it's, I've heard of stories of where things have disappeared only to reappear later. And this definitely feels like one of those cases where there's no reasonable explanation where a pendant would fall off a person and then disappear into the ether to be found
40 some years later.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah,
if it fell under, I mean, now if you told me that you were digging under the porch because it was fun to go find earthworms and then you found it digging under the porch, I'd say, oh yeah, you found something that was dropped 40 years ago.
Right.
But not something that sat on the boards in front of the swing for 40 years. That seems improbable.
Right in that little, and you know where the boards are, they have like the little seam between them. That's where it was. And it literally, I looked down, it was there. I don't know how grandma couldn't have seen it. It would be impossible.
Right. And how did it survive 40 years in that spot?
I cleaned it. Like it wasn't dirty. It wasn't anything. It just needed to, you know, like, cause it has brass on it. The brass was a little tarnished as tarnished happens.
Yeah.
You know, when it hits air, all I had to do was clean it.
Yeah, you would imagine 40 years of oxidation on brass would take a good hefty minute to even clean with Brasso if you didn't want to like kill yourself before you got done.
But again, like it doesn't make sense. But no. I don't think it was meant to be.
Yeah.
To make sense anyway.
No. And that's part of the paranormal, right? It means not normal. So outside of the normal realm of things. And that definitely falls into that category where logically speaking, none of it makes any sense. It wouldn't make any sense, scientific or otherwise.
It does give me a lot of comfort that at a time that I should have been, you know, run over by a tractor and dead, that not only did my grandpa come back, because I've never met him, to make sure I was okay, but to be there really the rest of my life, along with my grandma, right?
Yeah.
She's still protecting me as I grew up. And again, to find that out when you're 18, I was gobsmacked, to be honest with you.
Oh, I believe
and
it.
And I tried to give it to my grandma, but she wouldn't accept it. She goes, no, it is not meant to be. It's not meant to be in my hands. It's meant to be yours.
Yeah. Have you since felt the presence of your grandfather since the first time you've seen him?
Yeah, in dreams, actually. But it's kind of hard to say because my dad and him look pretty much identical. So my dad passed away. So when I would have dreams, he would always have white hair, my grandfather.
Yeah.
And that's how I was able to differentiate. My dad did not. He had my hair color. So I do actually still have dreams of my father. He's passed away about 15 years now. And he looks like the same he did the day he passed. Dark hair, same outfit. But if he would have let the white come in, you wouldn't tell the difference between the two. They were twins. They were so uncannily alike. And so that is why I thought it was my father, because he looked just like him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's neat. So when your grandfather would come to you in your dreams, was it usually a predication to something happening, or was it more of like a comforting scenario where he would come and just give you comfort?
I've been very lucky in that aspect. I have dreamed about a lot of my relatives who are not here any longer, or friends or what have you. And it's never any sort of warning that you're, you know, don't go across the street. You're going to get, you know, run over that day. It seems to be at a time of stress or anxiety in my life, or something hard where I start having dreams of them. And it's more comfort than anything. And honestly, my dad, he just makes an appearance. That's good enough for me.
Yeah.
The way I see it, if you're going to go and take your time in your afterlife to pop into my dreams for 2 minutes when you could play ping pong with Socrates or something, you know, it's a good day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of times our relatives just want us to be comforted when we need it. And they come by just to say, hi, you know, I'm thinking of you in that avenue. And what a way to be able to communicate with somebody that we never had while we were breathing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing. I never knew what my grandfather looked like. In actuality, I thought that my step-grandfather was my grandfather. I didn't find out the truth until all this happened. And how my grandpa handled it was really cool. He basically said, you know, Your real grandpa, your biological grandpa, died when your dad was really young. And he said your grandma was here with three small boys. And he said, I live nearby with my brothers. We were friends in school. I'm not going to, you know, you got to be there for your friends. And he said, and luckily for me, your grandmother, and he says, I was in love with her since I first seen her in elementary school. But finally, luckily for me, she fell in love with me. We got married and we had a few more children. And he said, just because you came here to me in a different way doesn't mean you're not my granddaughter. And I just love you with all you had. And I'm like, okay, let's watch Flintstones. That's literally what it was for me. There was like no big revelation like a TLC show. It was like, yeah, let's have some grilled cheese and watch some Flintstones.
Yeah. Because that's all you know, right? I mean, if that's the only person you know in that position, it's hard to say how it would be like if it was 10 or 20 years later.
Well, a friend of mine actually had a very unique experience. And so we were actually doing a cancer walk for life, and it was like 2 a.m. So try to keep everybody awake as we're walking around this track. I kept on coming up with stupid questions just to debate it to keep us awake.
Yeah.
And one of them was, it's like, you know, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler? You know, those general ones that everybody always hears. But one of the questions I asked my friend, and I said, so have any of you had a paranormal experience? And his name is Max. And Max was having actually a hard time and didn't tell anybody it. So he had actually gotten deployed and just came back. And when he ever since he was deployed, he started having dreams of like, looked like shadow figures, but with almost a little bit of a form. And they were like surrounding him where he was deployed. but and he was out in Afghanistan at the time. Mm-hmm. He came back, and home it got even worse. Ooh. He says, like, I see them, these shadow figures, when I'm trying to go to sleep. And he says, or in the house. And he said, they're all around my bed. And he's like, I'm getting scared. I don't know what to do. And so we talked about it. And I'm trying to word it in a nice way. I said to him, but do you get a feeling of ill intent? Like, when, or are you just scared because you don't know what's happening?
Right.
You know what I mean? And he said, he goes, well, I don't want people in my house. I don't know what they are. Are they evil? Are they? And I said, well, I kind of want to put something out there. And I said, I don't know if you're going to be very accepting of it. And he goes, okay, what do you mean? Right before this happened, about 6 months, and I says, when did you start having these dreams? He goes, about 4 or 5 months ago. And I said, what happened 4 or 5 months ago, Max? Now, he was originally from Phuket, Thailand.
Okay.
And do you remember what happened quite a few years ago now in Phuket, Thailand? They had a major tsunami.
Oh, that's right.
And that's where he actually, because he immigrated to Canada when he was 18, and that is where he went to school, Phuket. That is where he was born and raised. That's where a lot of his family was from. Oh. And I said, you know, when you hear these things happening, natural disasters, they have a lot of spirits, wandering spirits, because of it, because they literally don't know what happened to them.
Right.
I said, could it be possible that these are your family and friends kind of looking out for you to try to see if you're okay, because they don't know if you are? Right?
Yeah.
They're confused. And he said, actually, it kind of makes a little sense. So what we did is did a house cleanse. And I just said, you know what you need to do before you go to bed? Just tell them that you're okay. Tell them it's okay. That's it. And so I said, do that for a couple of nights. We'll cleanse the house. So we did, brought out the salt and got out, you know, all the sage, the house. And he just told them, you all can go. Dream stopped. And even awake, he stopped seeing him. House was clean. And honestly, that sounds sad, but it's also heartwarming in the same thing. I said, you've got to think about it. These guys went through something awful, but they just are coming here to make sure you're okay.
Yep.
How can you take that as a bad thing? It's almost like an ultimate show of love, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And I think that's what people freak out about, because it's one thing if you look in the corner and there's your mom or your dad or your grandfather or someone that you recognize, right? But it's a different thing if you look in the corner, you see a shadow. You can't tell what it is.
No.
And so that freaks people out. Hollywood has made it so that we fear our own shadow because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what makes people buy tickets, is something freaky and disturbing. So mm-hmm. We like to freak ourselves out. But once you realize that it's grandma or it's your parents or it's somebody coming back to visit just to make sure you're okay, it takes this fear away and it's no longer mm-hmm. terrifying. And it's like, oh, this is loving and this is lovely that they come back just to check on me to make sure I'm all right.
Like, if there's an afterlife, it's got to be pretty cool. That's the way I see it. It's got to be pretty cool. And it was amazingly quick how, like, literally he just said a couple nights in a row, you guys can go. And as he was saying it, I said, pay attention to see if there's less and less.
Yeah.
And that is what was happening. So he would say, you know what? And he'd do like a little dialogue and say, guys, I'm okay. I'm safe. You can go. And he said it like was half the next day and then half the day after. And then we did the cleanse and everybody went.
Yeah.
But I take it as somebody must love you a lot to come back after that.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing, I can't remember who it was that was telling the story, but their grandfather, I want to say grandfather, it's either grandfather or father, had passed away probably 10, 20 years before their next grandmother or mother was on their deathbed. And as soon as she was on her deathbed, the husband came back and started being seen in the house for days before. And mm-hmm. as soon as she passed, he disappeared and they never saw him again. And it was just coming back to collect his wife is all he was doing, because mm-hmm. he knew that she was close. And so he came back to be there in her time before she passed. And then when she passed, he, you know, welcomed her into the afterlife and they left, and that was it.
When my grandmother was passing, this same grandmother, I was at her bedside and she started having a little bit of toxicity with morphine. Mm-hmm. She had cancer. Oof. And that can cause you to hallucinate. And that's why I was not so sure until yeah. something happened. So she was talking to her about a day or two about all the people that were there in the room with her, not just me. A lot of time I was either alone or was with my sister or another family member, but we'd always take turns. So she would never be alone. But she was talking about people who are gone. So she was talking about Mike being my grandpa, step grandpa, yeah. Mike. And she was talking about a couple of her brother, Mike, who had passed, and she knew he passed, but then she was like, it was grandpa being Mike. And then Mike, her brother. And Elsie, and that's where I stopped. Elsie was my grandpa's sister, and she had passed away. So what grandma, we didn't tell grandma that for her to get her palliative care room, Elsie was in the room and she passed. We never told that to grandma because we didn't want her to get upset.
Right.
And now she's telling me that my grandpa, her brother Mike, and Elsie is there? That made me think twice. And I said, well, you know what? If they say it's time to go, you should go with them. I'll be okay. Don't worry. And she was gone a couple days later.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't leave. That was the thing. The doctor said she shouldn't be alive. Well, I'll be blunt. She should have been passed. But it was funny because I brought up to my mom and my uncle who was there, which was her son. I said, well, did she get last blessing, like last rites yet? And then they're like, why? Grandma didn't go to church. And I'm like, no, she didn't go to church. But you didn't know she was really religious? They go, what do you mean? I'm like, she was allergic to incense. She couldn't go to church. So at least several times a year, she'd have the priest come in from the Ukrainian Orthodox Church to come and bless the house. I'm like, you guys didn't know? See, my grandma was very, when it came to her spirituality, she kept it close to chest.
Yeah.
But her own kids didn't even know. So what we did is we called the priest. He came right over, gave last rites, dead 10 minutes later.
Wow. So what she was waiting for.
She was waiting for last rites.
That's amazing and a little terrifying.
It's a little bit of both. I worked in a hospital for many years. Do you know that is very common? Very common. That's why a lot of hospitals have a priest on staff.
Well, that makes sense. I was actually thinking it was for the people who were living, not for the people who were dying in that avenue.
He did both. You know, he was a multifaceted guy. He could take care of the living and the dead.
Well, I mean, you really take care of the living, right? But it's there to be comfort to those who are passing on as well. Because I'm sure if you've been in the hospital and seen people come and go, so to speak, in that avenue, most people who have been there when people have passed have seen various responses from the people who are dying, whether it's terrifying, whether it's happy and peaceful. Like, there's always this variant that people go through upon that point.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the worst I ever heard of was my mom, actually. And she was so freaked out. She didn't tell anybody for about, I think it was 8-9 months later. And she only really told me about it. She didn't tell anybody else. So when her mother was passing, it was long drawn out process, but it was coming very soon. And she was at the bedside. My grandmother had deep brown eyes. I got the same ones. And her eyes were closed. Mom said her eyes opened. They were blue, bright, like icy, almost blue. Oh, she looked at mom and said, I am so sorry. I hope you forgive me. And she died. Here's the problem with that. Mom said the voice didn't sound like grandma at all. It sounded like a male. And I'm like, oh, damn. I said, mom, I think I know who it was. And I says, and I think I know why you're freaked out. Her father was very physically abusive, and she had a very hard time dealing with some of that unpacking that. And my grandfather had bright blue, icy eyes. And I think it was honestly an apology for what he did. And mom couldn't even deal with that. She just shut down, wouldn't talk about it. And it was months later. And I said, so how do you feel about it now that you had time to let it sink in your head? She goes, that the fact that my dad could have possessed my mom, I'm not comfortable with that. And I said, but maybe that was his only opportunity to apologize for what he did and what he put you through. Yeah. And maybe he just jumped on it and took it. I said, it's up to you whether you accept it or not. It's up to you whether you believe it or not. But for me, it shows that he tried a little bit. And eventually she actually thought about it. And she goes, you know what? I actually think I forgive him. I'm ready to. She goes, if he's willing to go through all that and jump into, you know, basically jump into grandma's body. Okay. I'll accept it.
Yeah. I haven't heard of a deathbed possession before.
That's my first and last. That's the only time I've heard of it. And actually, I actually tried to look into the science of it. Your eyes can change color a bit at death, but not brown to blue.
Right. Like brown to dark brown, like brown, like somewhere within that color spectrum. I wouldn't expect you to like.
Not blue.
Right. I wouldn't expect you to like to have brown eyes and have bright green eyes or some other way off color.
All I know, if that was me. I don't know. I give my mom credit for handling it as well as she did, not run screaming from that room. I do. Right? Because that is horror movie material right there.
Yeah, especially if she like started to get up. Like she's like sat up in bed. Yeah.
Give me a hug. No.
No, I'm out. See you later.
Go away. Nope, Annabelle, go away. Go away.
Exactly. Moving on from that fun in the hospital world of things. Have you ever been on a paranormal investigation?
Yes, I have.
Ooh. What was your first one? What was your first paranormal investigation, if you can remember?
Well, I'll tell you the one that sticks to my mind the most, and it was at a former strip bar.
Oh, boy.
When I heard that somebody was haunting a strip bar, I got to go. And the thing is, this place has always been a strip bar. Always has. It was built as a strip bar, remains a strip bar to this day. I had to do it. We did an investigation because there was two places that was haunted the most. And it would be when the dancers were on stage, they would get inappropriately touched, not by the men that was there, by the invisible hands, which, you know, as a dancer, that would freak me the hell out because I would just think it's somebody who wants to give me a five or something. But no, they were just getting free grabs. The other place was behind stage in the changing room, and it was a male, and they would see the figure of a male. And going actually back into the history of that place, because I was their main researcher, so going back into that place, the land itself was originally owned by a male. And he did die on that, and he was the one that actually did go and build that strip club years and years and years ago. So our working theory was the fact that he actually didn't want to leave the strip club. And honestly, his personality didn't change a whole much if he's grabbing the dancers on stage, of what research has shown. So now you have a ghost guy not giving you any money and grabbing your butt. Yeah. So they decided to keep him. They didn't want to get rid of him. They didn't want to cleanse the building. They said, actually, the ghost brings a lot of people in. Okay. So we could tell you who it is, but if you want to keep him, that's up to you.
The ghost brings people in?
I would not keep Mr. Grab Butt. I personally would get rid of that guy. You know, I want to keep my dancers. So I would probably get rid of him, but the owner did not want to do it.
I don't know how a ghost would bring people in. Like not in some establishments, I get hotels, restaurants,
gambling establishments. Well, he started doing ghost tours. And of course, you know what that usually does is make the activity worse.
Yes. Yes, it does. So there are ways to monetize ghosts.
Yeah. He's a monetized ghost and not giving any fives every time he grabs one of the dancers. So he's not given the money, but they're taking money because of him.
Yes. Yeah. That's it's still strange. Like, were you guys able to confirm through methodology that it was him, or was it just more of like, it sounds like him, so it has to be him type of deal?
Did we get some decent sound bites? Yes. Were they male? Yes. But it was sound bites. Really, you couldn't say for sure what it was mean, what they were saying, you know, those types.
Yeah.
But again, research shows really of the people who died on that property, just one. And of the descriptors of that gentleman do match the descriptor of what people are seeing. And also he was a little grabby. So that's why we're leaning in that direction.
Makes sense. I mean, people do that. Like they just, it's like, this is what we got. And so let's go. I mean, not to say let's go with it, but in that sense, yeah. And it's tough, right? Because like people want, this is great misconception about paranormal investigations and investigating in general, is that people are like, you're going to definitively tell me what's here.
And you can't.
Sometimes. But sometimes it's like, well, all the evidence points to this guy.
Right.
But it could be his twin brother. It could be some rando. Lucky,
you can be definite. Like, for example, if you're seeing full body apparition and you hold that picture up and you're looking, oh, yep, same guy. But sadly, what a lot of people don't realize is with a paranormal investigation, it doesn't necessarily all just come into place like a puzzle pieces in the first time. Sometimes it takes multiple times to go in, see what's going up, get the evidence to be able to prove. It's not just a one-time thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's always the challenge, especially when people watch these TV shows. They're like, hey, these guys, they went in there and you know, they're 45 minutes of their episode. They got all this information. It's great. It's like, what you didn't see is that was 3 days of investigating and countless and hours of research that goes into it. And, you know, it's like now we've got this definitive proof of things. We did this. We did one night of investigating at this town. It's called Thistle in Utah. Mm-hmm. Amazing thing about Thistle is it was completely wiped off the map.
Really?
It was. There was an earthquake, giant mudslide, leveled the town, took out a train tunnel. And when just, if you look in the history of it, it was atrocious. Well, there's this. Happens to be this farmhouse where our friends have, they own the property. Their family owns the property. And so they can go out and kind of hang out at this old farmhouse. Generally, they just go out there and sit by the fire pit, kind of hang out type of deal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would camp out in the house type of thing because it's mostly there. So we decided to do an investigation there and we got a name off of it. We got a first name off of it. And we also got some of the people who were more sensitive picked up cows because lots of animals died during this landslide as well. Mm-hmm. And
but also, was it maybe part of a farm originally?
It was. Or... It was originally in a ranch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So, and the guy, when we were talking to the spirit using dowsing rods, he confirmed that he was a farmer or a rancher, I should say, and that he just stays and watches after his cows. It's like, that's really cool. But we got his first name. So I started doing some research when we got back and through land deeds and land records found him to be the original owner of the property and the house. Mm-hmm. But I had to use a couple different research ones because one of them just gave a first initial and it's like, doesn't give very much because you get an, you know, initial and a last name, like it could be anybody. But then I found a couple other ones where it gave us the name, the full name of the individual who owned the property.
And I think that's a lot of things that people don't realize when it comes to these type of investigations is the work that goes behind it. It, like you said, it's not that half an hour show, 45 minute to an hour show that you're used to watching. Just to say my own personal piece, get my little soapbox a little bit. it's not the case of people going and calling them out and yelling at them and calling them names and say, hey, come and get me, dude. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, because that just peeves the living heck out of me. The thing is, these were people.
Yes, they were.
And they deserve that respect at the same time. And a lot of people also don't realize, they just presume that, you know, ghosty will appear. Oh, yep. Match it to the picture in the book. We're good to go. The research, like you mentioned, the research behind it is difficult. And their land records, for example, they're not always complete.
Nope.
And if they even can get them, like, for example, if you're looking at genealogy, for example, it's a great example. If you're looking at somebody who has like an East European bloc sort of heritage of Ukrainian Polish, you are going to have a very hard time. And because most of those records were destroyed through years of warring.
Yeah.
Well, that happens here too. There's towns, like, for example, a landslide could have it took out the town records if the town was right there. You know, if it took out your city hall, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always the challenge. And then you get things like you get names or be able to get some type of identification from spirits that don't match the property at all.
No.
Because people forget that spirits can be transient. They're not always tied to property.
And it's not only transient. That's a very good thing. Like, for example, they're not necessarily tied to the property. But for example, if you have a person who's sensitive, or very sensitive who lives in that house today, that spirits are just drawn to them.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're like, finally, somebody could listen to me. They could have died like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 feet away. And or there could have been a graveyard nearby that people just put dirt over and called it a park. And that could be those spirits could move. They could go somewhere else.
Yep.
But also I find is a problem when it comes to identification is we don't necessarily have records for the full time. You have certain areas that have been established for so long and before records were actually taken down.
Well, and a lot of them, I mean, let's face it, a lot of the genealogy and history of families was held in the Bible.
Exactly. And what happened to a lot of those Bibles?
They got sold, burned, or tossed over time, right? Or they're in somebody else's house. I mean, they could be passed down who knows how long, right?
Exactly.
But that's how we used to keep track of our family history was in the family Bible. And there were births and deaths and the whole genealogy was held there back before we got the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple hundred years of that.
But the thing I got to say, though, when you're researching an American site, I really, truly appreciate the lack of privacy you guys have because, man, it is so much easier. I'm just putting it out there. It is so much easier to research an American site than it is a Canadian site because we have privacy laws. And when you're allowed to access records and, oh, well, it has to be 100 years from their death and blah, 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 it makes it difficult. So I actually recently was doing a little research into a place that I told you about. We won't talk about it on air. Easy peasy to find out history. I'm like, oh, wow, this is so easy. I could just Google and find all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to a library.
Some places are held behind pay curtains, pay walls.
Yes, but a lot less than it is here.
Yeah, that's probably going to make it a lot easier to handle those pieces.
Mm-hmm. But also what I find is another issue that a lot of people come up is the movement of the indigenous people by desire or mostly by force.
Right, by force for the most part.
There is even less records. There's no records.
Right.
So, for example, bringing back Cheyenne Mountain that I mentioned earlier, there was a major mass exodus and a warring that happened there between the American government and the indigenous people, but even before that, between different indigenous tribes. It was a big warring area. But how are we ever going to be able to track that? You can't. So right. When people have land and you have a massacre, that could be a problem.
Yep. Well, we also have this place, and it's actually technically in Idaho. It's southern Idaho, northern Utah. It's right on this border area. It's called Lava Hot Springs. It's a beautiful town, huge hot springs area.
Is it like heated with lava? Is lava like shooting out of stuff?
No, that'd be awesome. Really, they're really cool. But it's, some of the water's 120 degrees.
Oh my.
Like it just stays hot. Like we have pools that stay 80, 90 degrees in the summer or in the winter when there's snow on the ground. Anyway, the indigenous tribes in the area, there were several tribes in that sector that were warring with one another, but they called that land holy and all of them agreed to this being a truce zone. So they all agreed that it was going to be a place of restoration and worship. And so now if you're in that area and there are Native American spirits that are seen there, it's really hard to determine which group they would come from.
And not only that, but you got to think about what the reason they're there for. Were they part of that warring or are they to protect the spot as a holy spot?
Right, exactly.
If you were wanting to send somebody off that land, if they're there to protect it, it makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, it does. Thankfully, most of the people in the town are comfortable with the spirits that are in the town. And
I think a town like that's got to be Tombstone. The town of Tombstone.
Oh.
It's got to be. There's just so many. That's one of my dream places to go. Because that place sounds haunted out of the hoo-hoo.
It is. It is super haunted. And the crazy thing about Tombstone is it is not a big town. Mm-hmm. It is like two blocks long. Like what we would consider Tombstone, right? The town's actually a little bit bigger than that. But what we consider Tombstone, at least from our standpoint, right, is the historical, this is where the OK Corral is, this is where the gunfight took place. This is the old Tombstone. And yeah, that it's only two blocks. It is not very big. It is a very small area.
There's a ton of spirits just in that two block spot.
Tons, tons. And it's not just because of the gunfight. It's actually, from what I've seen with the hauntings there, little to do with the gunfight at the mm-hmm. Pig Corral. It's the fact that you have a lot of emotion in the area. You had people mm-hmm. who gained and lost wealth. You have proprietors who had shops and brothels and bars and all of this stuff. And there's Boot Hill that's just at the end of the street is where they buried the people who mm-hmm. were killed, you know, in the Wild West in that avenue. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of this stuff where you go in and you came in and you paid $10,000 to join this poker game. And that's not 10,000 today dollars. That
today's
was,
bucks. That that's was like then, which is like $1 million.
Exactly. And it was the longest running poker game in history. Like it ran for months and people would wait at the hotels across the street just to get a seat at the table is how popular this game was. But you would sit down with $10,000 and if you lost it all.
You literally lost it all.
Yeah. And you're out. You know, they kind of said it was the place that a cowboy could lose his month's earning in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's great. But yeah, the thing, imagine the amount of heartbreak and terror and happiness and all of these things that kind of associated with that are emotions that are just into the dirt and into mm-hmm. the boards. Cause they got the original boardwalks, original buildings are still there. And it's an amazing place.
And that's one thing that I also think that people don't necessarily recognize when there's a type of haunting is they always presume it's a ghost. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be. Is it an imprint or is it a ghost? Yeah, and that's what people don't necessarily understand. And Two Stone is actually, I think, is a very good example of that. When people are reporting seeing the replay of the shootout of OK Corral, is that actually the spirits doing it? Likely not. There was so much emotion. If you look into actually the why that they were going at each other at the OK Corral, the amount of emotion, especially from the Wyatt Earp side, was high.
Yeah.
And they were kind of PO'd, right? So so that makes sense that all that emotion and you're fighting for your life would stain that soil.
Exactly.
Makes logical sense.
It makes total logical sense. And that's where people, they always go by the name, or people have been calling them residual hauntings, mm-hmm. you know, the tape player pieces. And that happens everywhere, right? Gettysburg's another great example of residual hauntings. There are going to be lots of residual pieces associated to that, just because there's so much more emotion.
Now, I've seen one myself, actually. This was years ago, and I thought it was a reenactment, to believe it or not.
Wow.
My husband and I and some friends went down to a fort called Fort Henry. It's in Kingston. It's on the waterfront. And they had a lot of battles in there in the War of 1812 and stuff like that. Great place to see. Great exhibits. Totally worth it. So when you have to kind of walk up a hill, because, of course, these all are on a hill.
Right.
And right. So you go up the hill and you kind of go in and then you have like a moat.
Yeah.
A version of a moat. Right. So you have to cross a bridge going to the moat. And I looked up and on my left side, it was like at the corner of the battlement. There was a guy that he was loading the cannon, you know, they were packing the cannon. And then I seen a flash of light and then it restarted again. And I'm like, what the hell? And I stopped. And we were with a tour guide. And then Stefan, my husband, he's like, what? And I'm like, do you see that dude? And the tour guide, she goes, oh, is he packing the cannon? Yeah. And then it flashes. She goes, but now he's gone. And she goes, that happens all the time. And what happened, I didn't know until after she explained it. It was an accident that happened on that corner. Guy was packing it, packed it incorrectly. The cannon exploded. And well, so did he.
Oof.
And I'm like, that's sad. Like, think about it. That's like from the early 1800s and you're stuck in a loop packing a cannon. I'd rather be stuck in a loop. I don't know, doing anything but packing a cannon.
Right.
Like, I don't know, having drinks with friends, maybe going out for a dinner, going to a show. Now you're stuck packing that darn cannon for the rest of like eternity. That sucks.
Which is why I don't think, I mean, at least my feelings of those things is they're not actually there. Like that's not there.
And that's exactly what made me feel better about it. Cause I would rather think it's an imprint than this poor guy is doing that same thing over and over forever. But you can tell it was a loop. It was different. It was it almost looked like you were watching a movie, and it just repeated. Yeah. And I seen it repeat twice, and I'm like, what?
Did anybody else in your group see it
that day? But apparently that is seen very, very often in that upper corner.
Wow. But were you the only one in your group to see it?
Yes.
Man, that always...
And that's why I was kind of like... Yeah. But it was interesting because the tour guide could tell instantly, because she instantly asked me, because I stopped with a start, and I'm like... So I think she just had it happen so often to her
that
she's like, yeah, are you seeing the guy at the cannon? Yeah.
Well, and yeah, I mean, when you're like these tour guides, and I'm working on trying to get a talk to some tour guides, because if you're in a known haunted location and you're there all the time and you're doing these things all the time, you know they have to have experiences associated to them, mm-hmm. and that they're just used to it. It gets to the point of like, you know, this isn't anything new. Yeah, it's the dude up there. He died. This is how he died, and this is what happened, and it becomes very benign to them.
Yeah, it's just like an everyday thing. Get up, go to work, get dressed, you know, eat some breakfast, see a ghost.
Yeah, that would be interesting, which I think is why the show 28 Days is mm-hmm. super interesting. The 28 Days hauntings or something like that. Maybe just call it 28 Days, where these investigators spend 28 days in a haunted location straight.
That would be interesting.
Be a lot of fun.
I think so. I would sign up for that.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to do a reality show, you can call me. I'll be there.
Well, that already exists. So maybe 28 days can get a hold of you and get you on the show.
Put me on that show. I'll do it. I'll do it.
I mean, there are worse shows out there. There's the one where they investigate naked.
I'm not a fan of one. If I already gave a hint of the one I'm not a fan of. And it boils down to a lack of respect.
Yeah.
For the site and for what happened there and the pain and suffering that people went through. I watched one episode. I tried to give it a second chance. I watched a second. I'm like, can't do it. That's so disrespectful. Can't do it.
Yeah. And you have to. You have to be respectful of the people. And Dustin Perry, he's very open about this. And he was on Ghost Hunters International. And he's very open about this incident that happened, about provoking ghosts and provoking spirits. And he was up in Lept Castle, up in the room with has the trap door with the spikes in it. Mm-hmm. And he got provocative, and he got knocked on his can.
Good.
And he's like, it was the most terrifying experience I've ever had. And he did. And during that filming, he left the castle for a little bit to regather himself. And he will tell you to this day that it was one, a terrifying experience, and two, that he'll never do it again because of how much it has still, that whole feeling of being attacked by a spirit has left him and affected him in that avenue.
I find that, again, like I said, to me, to be respectful, even if it's somebody bad per se or did something bad, right? You still have to be respectful because let's just imagine for a moment that you're there and you're trying to help them move on.
Right.
If you're a jerk to them, that's not going to work out.
No, it's not going to work out. I look at it this way is if you throw a punch at me when I can see you, I got a chance to at least dodge it or protect myself.
Yeah. I agree.
But ghosts, unless you have that ability, and there are those who can see them a lot better than everybody else, but if you can't see them and they throw a punch, you have no way of blocking it or getting out of the way. You're just going to get hit and knocked on your tail. And if you have people in life that would throw a punch at you for looking at them cross-eyed, mm-hmm. you got spirits who are going to do the same thing because they just – are that ornery.
Yeah, you have people that pass that weren't nice and light. You know, they're not going to be kind in death.
No, as in life, as in death. And, you know, in some places you find them a lot easier. Like we've done a lot of prison investigations. Well, I'm pretty sure the people that are haunting prisons aren't the nicest of people.
Well, you need to come up here in Ottawa because there is it's a youth hostel actually, but it used to be a prison.
Oh, and fun.
You can rent the room on death row. if you want. But yeah, I took tours of there, and that place, wow, it is very interesting. It has the last working gallows in Canada, still got the original rope up there. And when you're walking through this place, now it was not even just a prison for the bad guys. It was prisons for male, female, children, and they used it for debtors' prison also. So you were right beside mass murderers if you owed somebody $5. And it wasn't just you, it was your wife and your children too. And they also used it as a place for people immigrating in who were sick with things like TB or cholera or something like that. Not a good place. So when I was doing the tour, they actually had the hole. Now, I now know why they call it the hole. I just saw it in movies. It was like a bad nickname. Yeah. Oh, no, because it's a hole. And they still have the actual wrought iron chains where they chained you to this floor. There's no heat. There's no, it's just in the summer, there's no air conditioning. It's hotter than Hades in there in the winter because it's Canada, cold as bejesus. And you're chained naked to the floor for 23 and a half hours a day. How can you be a nice person if you were to die in that situation?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be affected. It's like, it's kind of like if you've suffered from trauma in life, you're going to have trauma in death. You know, you need a psychic that's also like a psychiatrist to help some of these guys go. But that place, man, we were going to walk upstairs and I seen during the stairwells, they had like these kind of metal grates. Yeah. And I started to laugh. And my husband was saying, "What's so funny?" And I said, "Do you know what those are for?" He goes, "What?" I said, "The jumpers or who they throw. Try to catch them." And then they started telling this, the guide heard, and she goes, "Actually, you're exactly right." They said, "Yeah, I know. I worked in a psych ward." But you could see all over those walls, and they have big oak beams, right?
Yeah.
And you could see the dents and the hits of all the people they tried to kill. Jeez. So, I'm talking, this is not just the prisoners. It is also the guards. They're all trying to kill each other. They're overpopulated. The weather sucks. They have bad weather, and you're locked in a hole naked. How can you walk away from that being a normal human being alive or dead? It's impossible.
Yeah. And I think that's what they found in some of these prisons. Eastern State Penitentiary, they did the same thing. They held everybody in this like solitary confinement situation where they were in their cells for 23 hours a day. And the 1 hour a day that they didn't was exercise and showering. And they realized that that was psychologically damning to people. Mm-hmm. And they stopped doing it. Which is good, but the trauma's already been done to these people. And now, if you're looking at what's called the stone tape theory, that the stones and objects have absorbed all of this energy, you're just making it this great environment for paranormal activity to happen.
Oh, yeah. The best thing about this place is, so they decide to do a big bridge, Mackenzie Bridge, that's right beside it. And of course, it's all like stone and stuff because it's Ottawa, everything's stone. So, right. And it's right beside there. So as they start digging, didn't dig down deep, only like a foot, and bones stop. So they heard rumors that when people would die, they would bury them in the courtyard, which I've been in that courtyard. It's very, very small. It's like the size of a normal living room.
Oh, geez.
With all the people that lie or died there through the years, there's no way that they just stayed in that tiny little spot. So basically downtown Ottawa is all bodies. Basically, they just threw some soil on it and called it a day. So this one, when they were digging up the bridge, they actually dug up a corner. Just a corner was about 4x4. If I remember correctly, they found bones that actually matched up to about 67 different bodies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then they started doing the pipes next door. Bodies, stop. Every time they do a big dig, it stop, more bodies. So they actually was they were fixing a sinkhole. Believe it or not, it happened in the subway right downtown. The whole street collapsed. I have no idea. I wasn't living here at the time. And when they tried to fix it, stop, bodies. And again, it got delayed. Right downtown where our parliament is, for example, it has the Rideau Canal that goes right beside our parliament buildings and basically all our governmental buildings. Well, we live on the Canadian Shield, which that is all, you know, limestone and stuff like that. So they had to blast it out. So I don't think the safety that they did was the same as now, you know, in the early 1800s, the 1700s.
Oh,
so many people died of malaria and from explosions. And all they did is just where they fell over, dig a hole, throw them in. We don't have time to dig 8 feet. We'll just maybe a foot. That's good enough. And so the entire downtown Ottawa is body, 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 bodies. Jeez. And that's why the ghost tours have so much business. and so many different tours because they're everywhere.
Yeah. And there's that theory that if you're not properly laid to rest on, mm-hmm. you know, consecrated ground in those avenues, that it does help create this spiritual phenomenon or ghosts in this avenue. They're not able to move on. I don't know if it's so much that as, you know, the trauma associated to it. Malaria is awful. Of course, you're right on the water. Malaria got a lot of people and it still gets people mm-hmm. today. And then obviously the unsafe habitat of blasting limestone, that doesn't help. But they also,
and add on top of it, it's very humid here, very humid in the summer. And
oh, awful.
With dynamite, you have to keep it dry, and yes. it only has a certain amount of shelf life because it gets damp, it becomes unstable, and it blows.
Yeah, it's
well, that didn't help them at all.
No, I don't think people realize what dynamite really is made out of, but it's TNT, tetranitrotriglyceride, or something like that, and it's sawdust in a tube, and that's dynamite. It's mm-hmm. not much to it. And it's, yeah, if it starts to sweat, it's super unstable and it gets.
Oh,
volatile.
Yeah. I actually, it's coming out in the next couple of weeks. I did a show on Granger Taylor. Have you ever heard of Granger Taylor?
I have not.
Well, Granger Taylor actually was a man who lived in BC in the 70s. And short story is he was a mechanical genius, absolutely was a mechanical genius. And he was well sought after for his talents. And still his things that he has are still displayed in museums today. And basically he decided there was a UFO sighting in the town where he lived. So he got really into the whole UFO world.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go and build a propulsion system like a UFO.
Oh.
So he starts working on this. And what he invented, allegedly, was a communication device towards aliens. And apparently they communicated back.
Ooh.
And they said that they wanted to cut. They basically negotiated a deal sort of thing that he was going to travel with them because he was going to understand their learnings, per se. So he told his friends and family, yep, going to go travel with the aliens. And they are going to show up on a dark and stormy night. So that way you don't see the UFO like they did last time. So one day he ended up going half supper in his favorite place. Then that's the last time he was seen. Nobody seen him for years. They searched the area, couldn't find anything. Until a couple years later, a road crew found a blast site. Now, Granger Taylor's family actually had a farm and they actually had their license to be able to blast. And so there's a couple different working theories. Number one, because he said, I will be going on a 42-month length tour with these aliens around the Milky Way. Now, if you look at Einstein's theory of relativity, that is that 42 months going to be our 42 months? No, of course not.
Right?
Because of how time changes when you travel at light speed. So that's why some people think he's not back yet. But sadly, in that blast hole, not only did they find a VIN number from his truck, but they found human body parts, very, very tiny ones.
Right.
Back then, they couldn't DNA test if they were too damaged to DNA test. But his mother ID'd a piece of clothing that was partially destroyed that would look like a shirt that she made him. Most people are really hoping he's traveling around the universe with the aliens. But sadly, I'm leaning towards it was a rainy night. It was old dynamite that he had in his truck from the blasting. And maybe it was unstable because it was a rough old gravel road.
Ooh.
All those three in combination, it could be either or. But some people believe maybe he just blew up the truck so that way people wouldn't notice the landing site. I kind of hope he's living his best life flying around the universe. I really hope that he didn't blow up his truck. I really don't.
I think that's always the hope, right? It's like,
because that's not a good way to go.
Well, at least it's quick.
Yes.
That is
but
the
I really
unfeeling
do hope he's
way.
Touring, you know, doing his tour of the galaxy.
Right. That would be much more preferable.
Yes.
So,
but you should check it out. Check out the story. It's very interesting.
Definitely have to.
Considering the UFO, the original UFO was seen by an entire hospital that was working night shift. It was just hovering outside the window.
Yeah. It's those mass UFO sightings that intrigue me the most. When you get one or two people who see something who like, you know, maybe that's a UFO, maybe it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to dismiss the accountings, right? But when it's a group of people, a building or a town or a half a country or something like that, where it's like there are thousands of people or hundreds of people that are seeing this simultaneously, it's a lot harder to dismiss what's being seen.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Like, you hear so many cases of, for example, of the start of the story with this one. It was seen by a whole bunch of people in the hospital. And you can go and rule out, like, you're thinking, okay, six people, they're probably hallucinating or something.
Right.
But for everybody, it was first seen by the nursing staff on one floor.
Yeah.
And they're not on drugs and they're healthy. So if they're all seeing the exact same thing, giving the exact same explanation, and then everybody else in the hospital goes outside and sees, you know, that there's something to that. It's a little different than your one-offs of like, oh, I was driving my truck down this road and a light flashed in my face. It must have been a UFO.
Yeah. Or I was walking and I saw something in the sky and I don't know what I saw. And it's like, well, it's hard to explain what you saw because nobody knows. Because you were the only person that saw something. And, you know, it was late at night. You could have been tired. You could have been drunk. You could have been high. You could have been anything.
Tired.
Yeah.
It could be a million different explanations.
Exactly. But having 100 people all with the same psychological issue at the same time, like
that
in itself is paranormal.
Oh, unless they were using some rye that was, got some mold in it or something like that.
Oh.
You know how they have that work. Have you heard of that theory about Salem witch trials?
Actually, we talked about that on our Salem episode. We talked about
the rye issue. I really hope for that one. I kind of hope that was it a little bit. That they were all just high on LSD like mold.
There are pointings to that, but there's
also pointings to a lot of other things like encephalitis, right?
There's that too, but there's also pointing to something even more nefarious.
Which is even worse. Me being Canadian, I want everyone to be nice and kind to each other. But the reality of it is, if you dig down into the politics of the area at that time, I don't think it was as much witches as it was about power and control and taking people's money and their land and in a very bad way.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So you've been on paranormal investigations. You've done several of them. At the end of the night, we're usually just exhausted and tired and go to sleep. But a lot of us go out to eat or have some type of post-investigation ritual of some sort. What did you do at the end of an investigation?
We would always end up at one restaurant because they had what they called the goldfish bowl size of drinks.
But we're talking.
I'm being honest.
Okay, so we're not talking goldfish. I know what you mean by goldfish bowl, which I get. I've seen those drinks. Right.
They advertise them as goldfish bowl size drinks.
But were they alcoholic drinks?
Uh huh.
That's the first I've ever heard of anyone going out and drinking a goldfish bowl sized drink after a night of investigating.
It's dehydrated.
You got even more dehydrated after the end of that.
But honestly, I find that, and yes, you're tired. So a lot of times you'd go home, but if something happens and you're pumped up a little bit, you can't go home. You have some drinks with your friends, discuss what you had. Then you'd get a goldfish bowl size of alcohol just because you can.
And then you don't know if it's a paranormal hangover or just a regular hangover that you're dealing with the next day.
You see, I always get in trouble when they say, this is one restaurant, it's called Moxie's, that's out here. I don't know if you guys have it, but it's called Moxie's. And I'm like, do you want a Moxie size that? If it's fries, yes. If it's alcohol, yes.
Why are you asking?
I literally said, I remember after one, it was a long day. And I said, okay, you see this fishbowl? When it hits a quarter, bring another fishbowl. Three fishbowls later, I was carried home. I'm a lightweight.
I'm just surprised you got three fishbowls down. I think it would have fallen over after one fishbowl.
Oh, I made it through three, but I was there in that restaurant for quite a long time.
Still a lot of fishbowl. So we started asking people we've been talking to and interviewing this question. Pineapple on pizza.
No. No. And let me explain why.
Okay,
that was invented in Toronto. Did you know that?
I did not.
It was this guy that just thought it was a good idea. And honestly, some people think he's a great guy. You know, he's part of history. I think, no. Why? Why would you do that? It's gross. I will not eat it. And so a couple of my friends know it, and they constantly put like on my social media, like memes that has pineapple and pizza. And my answer is like, no, every time. Gross.
I guess no one really thinks about that because people call it a Hawaiian pizza, but they say it's ham and pineapple, but the true making of it is Canadian bacon and pineapple.
And it was from Toronto. So it's a bad idea.
Just not doing it.
Do you like pineapple on your pizza?
I do. I do, actually. I do.
Oh, no.
Pineapple and jalapenos are two things that I love on pizza.
You know what type of pizza I love? I don't know if you guys do it where you're at. Instead of doing the red marinara sauce, you do a white Alfredo sauce and seafood. Yeah. Mwah. That's like a chef kiss right there.
I don't trust the seafood in Utah because we're landlocked.
Chicken then.
But the Alfredo sauce, definitely. Definitely.
Oh, it's so good on a pizza.
In Parmesan sauce too. Part of it, getting older, finding that some of the red sauce causes heartburn and indigestion issues. And then you get the white sauce and it's a lot better.
You know, I traveled to Rome and I was looking so forward to having like Italian pizza. I didn't like it.
Because it's not what you think.
Well, I always like to eat the food of the area I'm going to.
Yeah.
But the problem was, so they put the marinara sauce.
Yep.
And everything there had prosciutto, which I like prosciutto, but they don't put any spices on it because they have the prosciutto. So it tastes a little too salty, but it has no other spice-based flavor. Then they just take globs of cheese and then put it like in a circle. And
yeah.
I've become spoiled at our North American pizza, having that cheese spread evenly through the front or the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. The dollops of fresh mozzarella, and then they bake it. So the mozzarella just kind of, you just get these dots.
Blob. Yeah. I didn't like that as much.
Yeah. It's not very good. I used to work at a Domino's pizza, and we got this person that would order pizza usually once a week, and they were lactose intolerant. But they still like to order pizza. So they got a green pepper pizza with no cheese.
Hmm.
The
interesting.
Most awful smelling thing I have ever smelled in my life. It's just disgustingly smelling. Because there's no cheese. There's just like you're baking bread, sauce, and green peppers.
Yeah.
It was just like, no, I'm good. Hmm. But yes, the traditional Italian pizza does not have cheese all the way around, just globs.
I wasn't a fan of the globs.
No. And I'm not a huge fan of prosciutto. It just...
I don't mind it in a lot of situations. It's just it's quite salty, so you can only eat so much.
Yeah.
But when they poured that all over the pizza, I'm like, oh. And then you have no other taste to balance it.
Yeah.
It was kind of off.
Well, my issue with prosciutto is it's stringy. And it's usually really thinly sliced, which is nice, but it gets real stringy and it's not very, at least from when I've had it, very palatable. And so it's like, yeah, this isn't as good.
I'll take you to some places. I'll get you some good prosciutto.
That works. That absolutely works. So if you're, when you become a spirit and you can travel the universe in the world, in the globe, where would you go? What would you go see?
I already have a death plan because I do spooky history. My best friend and I have a plan. Firstly, whoever dies first is going to dress up as a Grim Reaper or whoever's left. And so that person is going to actually do the eulogy. So what they're just going to do is stand in the back as the service is going on and then just move slower and slower down the aisle and then like do the big reveal. Yeah, I'm not actually death. And then do the eulogy. Step number two, whoever that person is going to take the flowers off the casket and throw it as a bouquet. So that way that we can find out who's next.
Oh, jeez. It's a reverse wedding.
Then we both plan to haunt. Now, I plan firstly to haunt my husband for about 4 days. The reason is he's an atheist. So he's like, I'm dying. I'm just going to dust. So it doesn't matter. I'm going to haunt the crap out of him. I'm not going to let him sleep for a week. I'm just going to constantly haunt him. And then I have better stuff to do. So I'm going to leave. But then I'm going to go to my friend's house and say, thanks for showing up as the Grim Reaper. Then I'll go somewhere in the ether.
Okay. So would you explore the globe first? Would you go somewhere that you've always wanted to be, or some places that you can't go alive because we're just not allowed?
Well, the plan is to do all that while I'm alive. So far, I've been knocking quite a few off the list, so I'm okay with that. But no, never. My plan, haunt the husband a lot.
There you go.
Because that will just be fun.
That will show him.
I told him, you can haunt me too. I'm okay with it. But I'm just going to haunt the hell out of you. But I'm only going to give you like maximum 7 days, like 4 to 7. That's it.
There's only so much person can stand sleep without sleeping. So yeah, gotta let him sleep or you kill him too. Ooh.
I said, like, you're in the shower. I'll just like rip open the shower curtain. Boo.
Shower curtain will not stay closed.
He's trying to watch TV. I'll peer on the TV. Ooh, like white noise, the movie.
Ooh, oh yeah. Just leave. Or turn the channel.
Yep.
Turn it off. Put something else on.
He's watching Big Brother again. Flip, flip, flip.
Now you're watching Oprah. It's not even on anymore. You're still going to watch Oprah. I'm going to find a way to make you watch it.
Find like the worst thing ever. I put on like TLC or Dr. Phil. Leave it there for like a day. He turns it. I flip it back.
Yeah. Teach him a lesson.
See, I'm a loving wife. I just wanted to make sure he knows that I'm okay.
Yeah,
by screwing with the TV and ripping open the shower curtain and scaring the bejesus out of him. He would expect no less.
Well, that's the great way to do it. Just haunt the heck out of your spouse just to let them know that you care.
I'm going to change your mind, like it or not. That's what I'm going to do.
So where can people find you?
Well, Horrifying History is on any major podcast provider. You can find us out on, again, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. But we also have our own YouTube channel where we have extra shows, just history-based shows, things like that for your entertainment. But we're also on Facebook at Horrifying History, on Instagram at Horrifying_History, and on Twitter at Horrifying HIST1.
Nice. And you are also part of the illustrious Darkcast Network.
Yes, with you.
Yes, yay! With us as well. And as always, stay ghosty, my peeps. Thank you for listening to the Paranormal Peeps podcast. You can find us on social media at Twitter at CPR Paranormal, on Facebook at Paranormal Peeps Podcast and Cold Spot Paranormal Research. And you can find us on Instagram at Cold Spot_Paranormal_Research.